This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 20th of June 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Now, may I introduce our readers for this week? Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Hilary Parsons.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recordings, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. For those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can usually also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winterstalkingnews.com. Unfortunately, we've had some technical difficulties with downloading our recordings recently. We're working very hard to rectify this problem. And so to our usual headline stories. The first from Deborah is headed, "Shake Up Could Be Devastating."
And it's written by Andrew Napier. Winchester residents could be thumped by a big increase in payments for services. Government reorganisation, a meeting heard. The reorganisation imposed by the government is set to see Winchester City Council replaced by a unitary authority covering a much bigger area. It could mean that Winchester City, including Wick, Hyde, Winnall, Highcliffe, Bar End, Stanmore and Fulflood, would have no local representation. So the City Council is looking at establishing a parish council to replace the town forum and cover the five wards in the built-up city. It's launched a review of how local government is organised in the city wards. The town forum heard from Patrick Davis, former Labour City Councillor, who said the work was being done at the wrong time, without the council knowing the final shape of the reorganisation. He said the costs are potentially devastating for people living in the Winchester town area. At present, the Winchester town charge for a Brand D property is £90.08. The slide reveals that for the new city council, which is only a glorified parish council, but with a wide range of assets and services, the charge could be £400. A new level of bureaucracy involving paid staff and offices for the new setup would bring the total confusion when the purpose of local government reorganisation is to clarify and streamline local government services with one new unitary authority in place of the present county and district councils. The timing of this exercise is absurd. Your meeting in January started the current exercise, but for 5 months there's been total silence. The report claims that the full council had decided to accept the forum's request, but this is untrue, as it has never been discussed. First, we need clarity on how local government services in a new unitary authority covering Winchester will be settled. I think it is totally premature to proceed in the way suggested in the report until we know the shape and size of the new unitary council, of which Winchester will form a significant and important part. That should be the council's real priority. Conservative group leader Caroline Horrell said she was concerned about a land grab by a new parish council. Councillor Kathleen Becker, cabinet member, said the timing has been foisted on us by the government. The timing is not something we have chosen. It's not a land grab. It's up to the residents to say how they want to be governed in this new world.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, your headline story, please.
Master plan is agreed for train station. But I think don't hold your breath. Sorry, shouldn't have said that. City councillors endorse a blueprint for redevelopment. The biggest redevelopment scheme in Winchester history has moved a step forward. The City Council has endorsed a concept master plan for the station approach area stretching from Gladstone Street to Worthy Lane and Andover Road. It aims to create a station quarter. The Council Cabinet approved the plan on Wednesday, June the 18th, which includes around 250 homes, shops and offices, and revamped car parking. In the past, the cost of the scheme has been put at least £150 million. The station approaches a potentially huge, £150 to £200 million-plus development, but, like Silver Hill, has been bedevilled for a decade by false starts and legal challenges. Now the council has teamed up with local architects Design Engine draw up a guide for developers for the 7-hectare site. A major public consultation was held in 2022, which attracted more than 1,000 public responses. Among the themes is that civic chiefs want to create a much greater sense of arrival for people coming from the train station into the city centre. Phil Gagg, for Winchester Action on Climate Crisis, voiced concerns and said it's a unique opportunity to provide a transport interchange at the railway station. He said an interchange for a district the size of Winchester requires at least 7 bus bays to enable good connections. The plan we see here doesn't provide anywhere near the space necessary. Green councillor Danny Lee raised issues with parking. He said the land is dominated by parking. This is an opportunity to go further with things like underground parking. The car parking needs to remain, but why does the plan not reflect that? The aim is to make it easier for people to walk and cycle through the reallocation of street space and a focus on people and places to prioritise and encourage active travel and public transport use. What do you think? Write to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk and see the Chronicle comment on page 22.
Thank you, Richard. We don't have page 22, so ignore that bit. Hilary, what's your headline story, please?
Former councillor in a fury at rotting centre by Andrew Napier. A former councillor has lambasted civic chiefs for allowing a former leisure centre to become derelict. The attack came the day before the City Council launched a new initiative to get public ideas for the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. A deal for the redevelopment of the centre with Southampton University collapsed earlier this year. Ian Tate, a former long-serving Tory councillor, told the Winchester Town Forum on Thursday, June the 12th, that sources at the university had told him they had lost patience with the City Council, that couldn't make up its mind what it wanted. The leisure centre is rotting before our eyes. I feel utterly ashamed at the disgraceful state that building is in. Something must be done. The following day, the council announced it was inviting residents to attend a public event on June the 26th about the next steps for the site. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Healthy Communities, said the Council would release a statement the following day. The Council is proposing to begin an open process of finding a partner to invest in the site, subject to Cabinet approving the proposed process at a meeting on July the 15th. Councillor Becker said, "We really encourage people to come along and find out more and let us know their thoughts about the planned process and potential future uses of the site. This drop-in event will give local people the opportunity to hear the proposed approach, understand the process and timeline for finding a new partner to invest, learn about the opportunities and constraints of the site, ask the project team questions and have their say. This council is one that listens, and we've been clear that there must be opportunity for the public to have a proper say in what happens at this site. Winchester City Council committed to finding a new partner to invest in the site on a long lease basis as long as the following three conditions were met. The green space, whether park, sports or play area, tennis courts or access through the site, is to be protected. The public have a proper say during the process, and provision of the skate park and indoor bowling must be protected. There's a drop-in engagement event on Thursday, the June the 26th, from 3 to 7pm at the Courtyard, the Guildhall, Winchester. Many local people want to see the leisure centre, which operated from the 1970s to 2021. It was replaced by the new centre at Bar End.
Thank you, Hilary. My headline piece is headed Civic Chiefs Question £500,000 Purchase of Pub. Civic Chiefs are under pressure to publish a business case for the purchase of a Winchester pub planned for conversion into flats. Lib Dem-controlled City Council paid around £500,000 to buy the Corner House on North Walls in 2020. Now, 5 years later, the building has still not been converted and is standing empty. A member of the public, Quinton Brooke, is questioning the purchase and has asked for the business case behind the scheme to be published. Questions about alleged mismanagement have also been publicly raised by former councillor Ian Tate. Mr. Brooke raised the issue at a recent council scrutiny committee meeting. In early 2020, prior to COVID, Winchester City Council Cabinet signed off the purchase of the Corner House without a supporting business case and at risk of its conversion to flats not receiving planning approval. He said that at the scrutiny committee in February, Councillor Todd had said, "I'm sure there is a business case at the time. I'm very happy to come back to you with a bit more detail as to how the original decision was taken." At that February meeting, committee chair Malcolm Wallace Green said, "It would be good to understand if we have a process for having a business case when properties are purchased." To which Councillor Todd responded, "Of course we do. I would be amazed if we didn't do that at the time. I mean, we would have done it at the time because it's always been the policy of the council. It wouldn't be a sound decision otherwise." Mr. Brooke said subsequent minutes did not mention Councillor Todd's pledge to come back with more detail as to how the original decision was taken. So far, more than 5 months on, no business case has been presented to the scrutiny committee. Mr. Brooke asked the latest committee, "When is the scrutiny committee going to properly scrutinise this situation so that the concern raised by Mr. Tate can be properly understood? Was there, or wasn't there, a business case supporting the council spending £500,000 on the Corner House? If there is no effective system for this committee to follow up on its actions, then it's too easy for councillors to defer their responses, knowing they will be lost in the history of actions and minutes." Mr. Brooke added, "The Corner House debacle stems from a rushed decision to spend £500,000 of public funds without a business case, which was also approved by the entire cabinet without challenge. Surely this committee's role is to establish if and how that happened so that similar risks and wastage can be prevented in the future." Councillor Wallace said at the latest scrutiny committee, "There are issues with the business case and whether we have learned lessons." Councillor Neil Bolton, Conservative, said, "There is inaccuracy in the minutes and how we are diligent in getting answers when the leader has promised to come back with the business case and has not." Councillor Todd has been asked to comment and has not responded. Right, well, we go on to the death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
Atterton. Michael George Atterton, on the 9th of June, age 95.
Boysman. Trevor Boysman, at home in Cornwall, on the 5th of June, age 74.
Bramley, Anne Bramley, after a short illness.
Chapman, Gillian Chapman, peacefully at home, 8th of June, aged 84.
Dragon, Alan George Dragon, peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital on the 8th of June, aged 79.
Edmonds, Marie Edmonds, peacefully at Old Orsford Cottage Rest Home on the 27th of May, aged 90.
Fit, John Linford Fit, peacefully 1st of June, aged 92.
Gibson, Leslie Gibson, née Houghton, 5th of June, aged 79.
Gomer, Natalie Vera Gomer, late of Bishop's Waltham, at Winchester Hospice on the 7th of June, aged 88.
Hall, Mervyn John Hall, peacefully at home on the 26th of May, aged 77.
Heridge, Sophie May Heridge, on the 21st of May, aged 46.
Hopwood, Alan John Hopwood, peacefully at Countess Brecknock Hospice, 26th of May, aged 79.
Merrickin, Jean Rosemary Merrickin, née Clark, peacefully at St Catherine's View Nursing Home on the 21st of May, aged 96.
Murray, Marion Murray, née Conlon, formerly of Stanmore, at Galway Hospice on the 25th of May, aged 68.
Short, Doris June Short, peacefully following a short illness at Abbots Barton Care Home on the 10th of June, aged 93.
Smith, Mike Smith, peacefully at home, 12th of June, aged 79.
Sweet, Reverend Reginald Sweet, former Master of St Cross, on the 4th of June, aged 89.
Young, Patricia Ann May Young, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home on the 23rd of May, aged 82.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment read by Hilary, please.
This is called Passing It On, Part 1, and it's been written by Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. In a recent podcast, I heard award-winning radio DJ Christian O'Connell open up about anxiety and burnout. He said something that stopped me in my tracks, both for its honesty and starkness. Any parent that doesn't have the courage to face their own inner pain isn't a good enough parent. It's the best gift I've ever given my kids. There is a clear biblical mandate to share the wisdom of God with those coming after us. Psalm 78 encourages us to not just teach the law, but to tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. The Old Testament has two Hebrew words for family. The first, ba'ith, is what we would think of as the immediate family under one roof. The second, mishporkor, is much more associated with a wider sense of clan, tribe or community. Both have a vital role to play in raising children in faith. Reflecting first on our own parenting experiences, there are three things we did to share the wisdom, values and truths of God with our family. One, tell the stories of God. We mostly failed to systematically teach our kids the Bible, but we made absolutely sure to tell them what God had done and was doing in our lives and those of others we knew. Faith has always been an adventure, and we did our best to make that a reality. Every time we witnessed an answer to prayer, we told the kids. And even when prayers weren't answered in the way we would have hoped, we made sure they were appropriately included in the journey. Two, deal with our own stuff. Another intentional thing we did was to try to model a grown-up and healthy way to express our emotions and resolve the inevitable conflicts that cropped up in family life. This was not easy, but as our children have become adults, I have realised just how this is one of the most powerful and profound ways to show them what God is like. The best parenting tip I could ever share came from a friend and can be summed up very simply in three short words. Say sorry quickly. Three, it takes a village. We also made a point of helping our kids relate to others in the church who could be role models for them, such as youth leaders and others in the community. We figured that there were some things our kids could hear more easily if they didn't come from their parents. This sometimes took effort and energy to organise, but it turned out to be a massive blessing. I'll say more about the wider community's involvement in part two next month, but in the meantime, I'm praying for all those who are parents. with the exciting job of passing on God's truth and values in this season of life.
Well, now we have letters to the editor. There are 12 letters in the Hampshire Chronicle this week, and they are, as usual, on a variety of subjects. So, Deborah, could you read the first letter, please?
Yes, the first letter is from Michael Fielding, and it's about tree preservation orders. The article in the Chronicle, June the 12th, and the leading article about an oak tree in Winchester's Cannon Street was of much interest to me. This type of story is not new. 2 years ago, a neighbour applied to Winchester City Council to have a vast holm oak in his garden felled and replaced by a tree more appropriate to the location. The application was rejected. When the tree preservation order was made in 1992, we advised Winchester City Council that the tree then was too large for a suburban garden and it had a major negative impact on local gardens. The tree has grown considerably over the years and overlays our garden by 60%. In a year, we can fill 9 of the council garden bags with acorns, cups and leaves. Such leaves do not break down in a domestic compost heap. A major concern, as we have previously told the council, is the stability of the tree, as the soil depth we think is only around 15 to 18 inches. Should the holm oak come down in a storm, then we feel that not only would our garage be destroyed, but that our house itself could be damaged. Storm Eunice in February 2022 brought down a council lime tree which blocked the road and also caused severe telephone and internet problems for some time. The council felled 2 more similar local trees. One in such a precarious position that the house owners were told to evacuate and the felling was done immediately. And that's from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Leo Prashant Sakari writes about the city's character. I recently read your article titled Letter What Winchester Needs for a Better Life and found myself strongly resonating with its message. As a resident of Winchester for the past 2 years, having come here initially as a student, I've grown deeply attached to the city's unique character and potential. The concerns raised about affordability, over-commercialisation, and the diminishing space for community and creativity echo my own experiences and observations. Like the letter writer, I believe Winchester thrives not through large-scale luxury development, but by supporting independent businesses, nurturing local arts and culture, creating affordable housing, and protecting the city's natural and historic beauty. With a master's in business and other qualifications, such as architectural studies and environmental management, and practical experience in technology and sustainable development, I am eager to contribute to the kind of community-led change the article envisions. During my time at university, I worked on 2 projects directly relevant to this. One focused on designing sustainable builds and affordable housing, and the other on advancing green energy solutions. I'd be delighted to share ideas and work with others who care about making Winchester not more livable, but more inclusive, creative, and environmentally responsible. I'm happy to meet, present my ideas, or get involved with any efforts moving in this direction. I would happily design and develop a new estate concept in Winchester related to this, making it into a reality. All I ask is a chance and support. Thank you for giving voice to such an important conversation. I look forward to hearing from you. Leo Prashant Sakari, Quarrel Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
And this letter's been sent by Adam Wyman, Station Approach. I note the Station Approach consultation document says that concerns raised about the loss of car parking spaces can be addressed at a later stage. I don't see how. It appears that the council is determined to sell off the station car parks to fund a vanity project without any consideration of the fact stations exist to transport people, places, and car parks at stations exist to allow people to use those stations. For many people, the alternative isn't public transport as no services exist. I commute daily to London from the full car park. I have no other option to get to and from the station. There are plenty of others in the same situation. The car park is generally full. If I cannot do this, then I would have to move house to an area where civic chiefs support train travel. At other times, we drive in to spend money at the restaurants, bars and shops in Winchester. Again, there are plenty of others in the same situation who have no public transport alternative. If there is nowhere to park, then we will just go elsewhere and Winchester will lose our business. Has any analysis been done over station users? I suspect the vast majority use it to commute. Has any analysis been done of the environmental impact of removing car parking spaces at the station, forcing commuters to use a car for their whole journey? I suspect the impact will be significant. Has any analysis been done of the loss of business from losing those who arrive by car? I suspect the loss of business will be significant. Has any analysis been done of whether businesses will want to lease these new premises in a city already teeming with retail? I suspect not. No doubt this project would fall down if the proper analysis were done. This feels ripe for a judicial review. And that's sent by Adam Wyman, Northwood Park, Sparsholt. And the
my next letter is another letter about the trees in domestic suburban gardens. This is written by Roger Stevens. Residents in Winchester are in a row with City Council over Jack and the Beanstalk oak tree that they say is a danger, Chronicle, June 12th. Today, we often regard great trees in our parks and forests as objects of beauty and indeed mysticism. Easy to regard them as such if one is not enveloped in the gloom of their deep shade, subject to the annual leaf drop, the cascade of dead twigs and leaves, and of course, the continuous bombardment of poo from their avian inhabitants. The anonymous originator of the preservation order missed a trick. Had he written the magic words, "Under threat of development," I believe the City Council's tree preservation officer would have fast-tracked it through. It would have been rubber-stamped by the planning committee by now and presented as a fait accompli. Too bad about the threat to buildings and the subsequent awards of damages against the council. I have not known of any tree in the City Council area that has been considered worthy of preservation in its own right. However, any tree that is identified by anybody as being under threat of development is likely to be preserved, regardless of location or arboreal merit. Consequently, if you want to build a kitchen extension or develop the land at the bottom of your garden, you have to get all the nearby trees raised before an unfriendly neighbour gets wind of your plans and foils them with a tree preservation order. The wrinkle here is that the council goes to great lengths to preserve the anonymity, I can't say the word, of the perpetrator so that the victim will never know who put the boot into his plans. Gross abuse of process and a national disgrace. That was written by Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from George Spencer. Season ticket prices announced. Winchester City Football Club have recently announced season ticket prices for the coming season. And if you buy one before the 30th of June, it will only cost you £99, compared with the regular price of £169. This is an incredible offer. With 21 home league matches, it works out to £4.71 per match, and is half the amount Eastleigh are charging, and less than a quarter of the price of the cheapest one at Southampton. So, get that early bird offer while it's available and support your local team in their attempt to return to Step 3. George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Albert Parker would like some more obstacles. With the rise in the number of occasions reported that vehicles are being driven into pedestrians or pedestrian areas, would it make sense for Winchester City Council to provide a few concrete obstacles in Middlebrook Street to safeguard visitors and shoppers, similar to those provided in the pedestrian High Street? In addition, these could be used as temporary cheap public seating until the start of the city centre regeneration. What price, public safety? Albert Parker, Berwick Close, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Hillary, please.
Jeffrey Brooking sent in a letter about school meals, free school meals. What wonderful news that from the start of the 2026 school year, every pupil whose household is on universal credit will have a new entitlement to free school meals. This announcement will break down huge barriers to opportunity in order to give children the best start in life. Hence, after 14 years of cruel Tory cuts, this announcement is a huge boost for parents struggling to get on in life, and is even more proof that with this Labour government, when promises are made, promises are kept. That's Jeffrey Brooking, Saxley Court in Havant.
Thank you, Hilary. My next letter is about the Corner House, which is one of our headline stories, and it's written by Ian Tate, who's also mentioned in that story. I have challenged Winchester City Council a number of times over their purchase of the Corner House in Parchment Street in January 2020 without having prepared a robust business case, or in fact, any business case. The Chronicle has given the issue good coverage, but to this day the building remains empty and deteriorating. I was reminded of this when I learned of Cat Brandwood's decision to close Toscanaccio further along Parchment Street. For 13 years, Toscanaccio was a brilliant independent business offering excellent and knowledgeable service, and I bought a lot of wine there. Its closure is a huge loss to Winchester. It's also got me thinking about the issue of business rates for the Corner House, and so I submitted a Freedom of Information request to the City Council. The shocking answer I got back was that the Council has paid £70,767.69 since January 2020 to April 2025. No rates reduction could be applied for as the building stands empty. How appalling that the council can arrogantly leave their building empty with taxpayers forced to pay full business rates when Toscanaccio is treated so differently. Trading conditions are hard for businesses at the moment, but how can the council get away with leaving their buildings empty and just force the public to cover the bills? It gives a very poor impression of the controversial competence of the Lib Dem cabinet. That was written by Ian Tate, Romsey Road, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Mark Rowe. A massive thank you for putting my letter in your issue of Thursday the 12th of June about me doing 40 miles for Calm, C-A-L-M. Today I have done up to 48 miles so far this month and raised £50. I'm looking to break this target. Once I finish the challenge, I'll let you know. Calm are a fantastic charity who make a difference. I've had bad mental health problems and I'm on the up thanks to the great people like yourselves, my family, Hampshire Police, Winchester City and lots of others. I wish you, my fellow readers, all the best for the future. Thank you for your fantastic work and journalism. Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Jenny Stables wonders about the blue flowers. Does anyone know what the blue flowers are that are bravely growing and abundantly on the east side of the central reservation in the M3 cutting? They consist of beautiful blue spikes about 3 feet tall. How did they get there? Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Hillary.
And Monica Gill writes about trip hazards. I read with interest the letter from Albert Parker regarding the area between Iceland and Primark in the Chronicle Online. At a recent meeting of TARA, which stands for Tenants and Residents Association, which was attended by a county councillor, this was an item on our agenda, as it is an issue regularly raised with our group. During discussion, the group was surprised to learn that this area is designated as a road, which therefore means pedestrians not only have to avoid tripping over the uneven and loose paving slabs, also have to dodge cyclists who, by virtue of the fact this is a road, have the right to cycle in this area. Pedestrians should also have the right to feel safe when walking in this part of the town. They also have to deal with food vans being sighted there, which means another obstacle to avoid. Therefore, our group would like to see this area become a designated pedestrian area. There is a perfectly good cycle rack in the car park where they could leave their bikes or, failing that, dismount and walk through this area. We appreciate the council wish to encourage cycling, but most cyclists come in for a coffee, whilst most pedestrians are in to shop. From Monica Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Hilary. And the last letter is from Dale Thompson, and it is headed Danny Chambers. It is very encouraging to read the very valuable work that Danny Chambers is doing in Parliament, on select committees, in lobbying Hampshire County Council, and in supporting worthy local charities. We have to hope that every MP is doing similar things, though Danny Chambers' range of activities must be hard to match. I feel sure that he must be the only MP who has recently been checking up on the health of penguins. And that is written by Dale Thompson, Compton Road, Winchester. Now we go on to editorial comment, read by Richard, please.
And we're back to station approach. Appropriate enough, this is called Groundhog Day at Station Approach. You could be forgiven for having lost count, but we think that this is the third attempt to develop Station Approach in more than a decade. It's getting a bit like the 1990s comedy Groundhog Day, when a man is cursed to repeat the same day again and again. The City Council on Wednesday, June 18th, endorsed a concept master plan for the new area, which stretches from Newborough Street all the way to Andover Road and Worthy Lane via Stockbridge Road. This will guide any future developers as to what the City Council wants to see in the development. They envisage around 250 homes, shops, offices, revamped parking, and a more impressive entrance to Winchester for rail travellers. The two previous attempts were knocked back, including by a High Court challenge. As we've mentioned before, the city dodged a bullet as the previous schemes were very office-heavy at a time of hugely increased home working and less need for grandiose offices. This development is still surrounded by uncertainty. COVID may have gone, but the economy is still wobbling. It's worth repeating that the City Council has to get this one right. With the similar setbacks for Silver Hill, aka the Central Winchester Regeneration, another failure will cement the city's reputation for failing to get things done. One good sign is that this latest master plan would appear to be less commercially driven. There was a major public consultation back in 2022, and it would appear that civic chiefs have taken this on board.
Thank you, Richard. Now we go on to the opinion piece. Before I read that, I realise I've failed to read out the comment that about letters. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So on to the comment section, which is written this week by Khalid Aziz, and it is headed, Ask the Right Questions. So, finally, we are going to get an inquiry into the grooming scandal. It'll be judge-led, will compel witnesses to attend, cost millions, and take forever. The victims are seeking closure and justice. If past inquiries are anything to go by, I fear they will be disappointed. As our late Queen memorably said of another matter, recollections can vary. You can be sure that not everyone will feel compelled to comply with their oath and tell the unvarnished truth, even in the face of preening, clever Dick counsel posing pompous questions. No doubt there'll be talk of establishing a timeline. Who was involved? What did they know? When did they know it? The killer questions will be around what people did to stop the grooming. If they didn't, why didn't they do what was required? It'll be an uncomfortable time for local authorities, who may be shown to have been derelict in their care of young, vulnerable girls in their care. Those councils may turn out to have been predominantly Labour-run, which has led some to suggest that there was a key factor in the Prime Minister first ruling out such an inquiry, only latterly bowing to pressure. Lessons will be learnt. They always are, but such lessons are seldom remembered until the next time. However, no heads will roll. They never do. Everyone will have known something, but no one will be deemed to have possibly known everything, so couldn't reasonably be held accountable. The police may not come out well for interpreting their principle of policing by consent to mean not upsetting Muslim communities' sensitivities. Some police will have been motivated in their inertia by the prevailing view that girls in care being preyed upon is an inevitability. Today, many police forces are more enlightened, thanks, I'm sure, by the rise of senior women in the service, culminating recently in Hampshire of our first ever female chief constable and crime commissioner. I was struck reading in a local police station crew room a very thoughtful poster on how language can betray the life on Mars misogynistic prejudices of the 1960s. Don't say, this girl has been sexually active since the age of 12. Do say, this girl has been abused from the age of 12. A phrase which more accurately apportions responsibility and could lead to a more thought-through response to potential police action. The one question I doubt will be asked in the inquiry is, why did these men do it? Well, let's attempt an answer. Firstly, it has nothing to do with race in itself. Recent British history is littered with white males who are just as bad. The late Liberal MP for Rochdale, Cyril Smith, was never brought to book for his abuse of small boys. Neither was the emetic Jimmy Savile, who was allowed to rampage through BBC studios. In both cases, those who knew turned a blind eye. As to the cause, maybe in Savile's case it was down to his curious upbringing by his mother, his so-called Duchess. Not much ducal about her. The men of Pakistani origin are perhaps differently motivated. The interpretation of their religion, where women are enjoined to cover up, leads them to regard white girls to be fair game because in their eyes they are shameless. A Saturday night in Portsmouth, Southampton or Andover sees young females about town in outfits that barely cover anything and certainly offer no protection from the weather. Christianity, or certainly the Church of England, being some 1,300 years ahead of Islam, has adopted two modern trends, quietly ignoring the teachings of biblical books such as Leviticus. Many Muslims are absolutist about the Quran, as are other religions. Education and wealth haven't yet washed out barbarous medieval attitudes. But society cannot wait. If the inquiry asks the right questions, we might get the right answers. Now we go on to Belgarum, which is an alternative look at the news.
And this next article is entitled A Perfect Stop on the M3. A pair of motorway service stations near Winchester have been ranked among the United Kingdom's best for 2025. The Moto Winchester northbound and Moto Winchester southbound can be found on the M3 between junctions 8 and 9. Combined, they were ranked on as 15th best motorway service station in the UK, out of 93 analysed by Which, the consumer choice organisation, survey of its users, which rated motorway service stations on a number of factors. These included the prices in shops and food outlets, the range and quality of shops, cleanliness, convenience, and quality of outside spaces. Which wrote, 4 years after our last motorway services survey, our responses still paint a bleak picture of a network blighted by dated and inadequate service areas, many of which are filthy. And while the motorway you're travelling on limits your options, our survey of 1,000 members, rating nearly 90 service stations, revealed that stopping a few junctions earlier or later could make all the difference to what you'll find when you pull in. And you can find the full ranking on the Which website. The article is accompanied by a photograph which shows the signpost So at the Moto, you can have Greggs, Burger King, M&S, Costa and WH Smith.
Deborah, it's good to have the accolade that our motorway service station is 15th best in the country. Richard, you have another story from Bulgarum.
Well, yes. Hold on to your hat. Village shop gets £25,000 refurb. A £25,000 council grant has helped to breathe new life into a village shop. Barton Stacey Stores has undergone a major refurbishment thanks to a £25,000 grant from Test Valley Borough Council through the Rural England Prosperity Fund. The funding supported extensive structural repairs and the installation of new security measures, including CCTV. Lisa May, who runs the store with her husband Kevin, said, "The project has made such a difference. The shop was in real need of attention, and without this support, we might not have been able to keep it going." The couple moved to Test Valley from Kent 6 years ago.
Thank you, Richard. Now we have the letter from Westminster, Hilary, to read, please.
This month's government spending review included some new investments for our NHS and hospitals. It is welcome news that the government has finally listened to Lib Dem common sense, but without fixing social care, putting money into the NHS will be like pouring water into a leaky bucket. Spending risks going to waste if our hospital can't discharge patients who don't need to be there because local authorities don't have the resources for care services. That funding for local authorities is crucial because this month I've been standing shoulder to shoulder with campaigners fighting to protect vital care services here in Winchester and across Hampshire. The Conservative-run County Council has already closed too many facilities, and now they're threatening to close Chesil Lodge Day Centre in the heart of Winchester. That would be a devastating blow for unpaid carers who rely on Chesil Lodge to give them a much-needed break from caring duties. If we don't support unpaid carers, more people will be forced into full-time residential care, which ends up costing the council and taxpayers even more. With the political will, proper investment and genuine commitment to care work, we can build a system that supports people with dementia and provides dignity, giving their families the help and hope they so desperately need. Chesil Lodge is a lifeline for unpaid carers. We cannot let it go without a fight. I urge you to join the campaign to save it by signing the petition at dannychambers.org.uk/Chesil-Lodge. In Parliament, I've been putting pressure on the government over our growing dental crisis, especially in rural areas. 53 dentists left the NHS last year in Hampshire alone, so I've called for an urgent rescue plan to fix the broken NHS dental contract to ensure everyone can get the dental care they need before it becomes an emergency requiring a trip to our overstretched A&E. As Lib Dem spokesperson for mental health, I am delighted to have been appointed to the Mental Health Bill Committee, an opportunity to push for better support for those in need of support. Young people's mental health is a priority for me, so I have met with local organisations like Winchester Youth Counselling and visited schools across the area to understand the challenges young people are facing. I'll be taking what I've learned to Parliament and making sure this mental health bill delivers real change. Finally, it's been great to spend much more time in the constituency during the last recess, from taking part in the Watercress Way sponsored walk organised by Winchester Rotary, raising £25,000 for Street Reach's Friday night football, to dusting off my stethoscope again for a special visit to the Penguin Cove at Marwell Zoo, Helping with the health checkups for the penguins was a perfect way to end the break. My team and I are ready to help, so if there are any issues or concerns you have, get in touch at danny.chambers.mp@parliament.uk.
Thank you, Henry. Now, a quick look at some of the events that are coming up that you may be of interest to you. Sunday the 22nd, A Night at the Opera. This is an evening of choruses from popular operas at St Mary's Church, Mischeldever. Friday the 27th, there is the Winchester Beer and Cider Festival. Interestingly, it takes place at the Winchester Students' Union in Sparkford Road. So I haven't been in there, must go to some time. Sunday the 28th, there is the St. Cross Fete that starts at 1:30 p.m. Also on Saturday the 28th, Music for a Summer's Evening. Madrigals and choruses from Les Miserables, Dash of Jazz, etc., etc. That is Chelmsford Methodist Church. That starts at 7 p.m. Tuesday the 1st of July, Made in Winchester, a concert to celebrate the choir's 20th anniversary. That is the United Church in Jury Street. Wednesday the 2nd of July, Illyria presents Wind in the Willows, an outdoor theatre performance. That is at St Swithin's Prep School, Allsford Road, Winchester. And finally, on Friday the 18th of July, a Foodies Festival. That will be at River Park Recreation Centre. And now we go on to items of general news. Deborah, have the first article, please.
And the first one is entitled Student Spectacular Fashion Show. Fashion took centre stage in Winchester as university students unveiled their creative talents on the catwalk. A total of 43 final year BA fashion design students from Winchester School of Art presented their collections at a graduate show held in the city's Great Hall on Tuesday, June the 10th. The event marked the culmination of their degree studies and attracted guests including the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jamie Scott, and representatives from Winchester BID. Sharon Williams, Senior Teaching Fellow and Course Leader for BA Fashion Design, said, "The graduate fashion show is always a spectacular performance. This year we saw 43 unique collections that the students have each designed and styled onto their own models, creating head-to-toe standout looks. The collections reflected a range of personal stories and themes, including cultural heritage and sustainability. Three students, Millie Toombs, Daisy Effort, and Chuck Ho, received BA Fashion Design Awards for their exceptional commitment to the course, fellow students, and the school." And in the accompanying photograph, there are the three students, and you certainly would know that they are fashion designers.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Dyslexia documentary praised by Learning Guru. A learning expert has praised a new dyslexia documentary by celebrity chef Jamie Oliver. Susie Miller from Allsford, who was diagnosed with dyslexia at the age of 53, has praised Jamie's dyslexia revolution, which sees the chef explore the challenges faced by schoolchildren who have dyslexia. He also campaigns for more to be done by the government for the teachers, charities, parents and children who've all been let down. The founder of learning advice website eLaHub has said the documentary is a start, but more needs to be done. Following her diagnosis, Susie reshaped her professional practice and advocates for accessible learning and dyslexia awareness in both education and the workplace. She said, "I found Jamie's Dyslexia Revolution show to be powerful, deeply personal. The testimonies from people who are dyslexic were incredibly moving. The documentary signals that we don't need small tweaks, we need a full-scale shift, whether in schools, universities or the workplace. It's time to build learning where all learners are included, supported and set up to thrive. The personal impact of dyslexia is familiar to Susie, who was labelled plodder and average at school. Her daughter was also told she wasn't dyslexic enough for school support, forcing them to pay for private assessment. She believes implementing the show's recommendations for earlier dyslexia screening and improved teacher training could significantly help struggling children and parents unable to afford private assessments. Sue has backed Jamie's efforts, believing the celebrity can make a difference. She said, "One TV show cannot make a difference on its own, but it's a start. Jamie Oliver has a great track record of turning a TV show into a movement like with school dinners. He uses his resilience to keep pushing for progress. The show resonated with her own experiences. She said, "Although my personal experiences of dyslexia feel less challenging than many of those featured, it brought home just how much of an emotional toil being dyslexic is and how it negatively impacted my confidence. The show was an emotional watch. A dyslexic diagnosis can be life-changing. You no longer feel stupid. That shift in mindset changes everything." Susie is an award-winning author, speaker and advocate for dyslexia awareness.
Thank you, Richard. Hillary, please.
And this is an article by Reese Barrett. Private school loses VAT court challenge. A private school in Fair Oak has lost a high court challenge against the introduction of VAT on their fees. The King School was one of several independent schools, pupils and parents, including those from FAPE schools and those who have special education needs, who argued that the policy was discriminatory and incompatible with human rights law. The High Court was told that some children are privately educated because of a need for a single-sex environment because of previous abuse, including one of the pupils in the claim, who was bullied at her local state school. However, the Treasury defended the policy, which took effect on the 1st of January, and was supported by the HM Revenue and Customs and the Department for Education. Caroline Santa, head teacher at the King School, said, "After over 2 months of waiting, this judgment comes as a huge disappointment, but we will continue to challenge the legality of this policy." Three judges at the High Court, Dame Victoria Sharp, Lord Justice Newey and Mr Justice Chamberlain, dismissed the challenges today and issued a 94-page ruling. They acknowledged that the policy does interfere with certain human rights, but stated that the government has a broad margin of discretion in deciding how to balance the interests of those adversely affected by the policy against the interests of others who may gain from public provision funded by the money it will raise. On the issues raised around previous abuse, the judges added, "While sexual harassment of girls at school is undoubtedly a problem, we do not consider that the evidence establishes more generally that there is a significant cohort of girls who, as a result of having suffered such harassment, can only be safely educated in a single-sex environment." The judges clarified that the European Convention on Human Rights, as cited in the case, does not guarantee access to private education or require the state to subsidise it, even for religious reasons. Sir James E.D. KC, representing the Treasury, HMRC and the Department for Education, told the court that removing the VAT exemption was a key part of Labour's last election manifesto and is expected to generate between £1.5 billion and £1.7 billion annually.
Thank you, Hilary. My piece is headed "Making Perfect Time as Clock Gets Facelift." Winchester Cathedral's famous clock tower, tower clock, has been given a facelift after several decades of weather damage had made numbers on the dial barely visible. To avoid the high cost of erecting scaffolding around the tower to carry out the works, a team of cathedral specialists spent several days abseiling down the clock face to repaint the copper and wood dial and restore the gilded numbers. The cost of renovation was met by the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. It hasn't been established what the original colour of the clock face was, but photographs in the 1960s guidebooks established that it was blue after it was last repainted more than half a century ago, and the cathedral authorities decided that they should continue with that colour. The clock itself was installed in the cathedral tower in 1777. John Ryan, director of works at the cathedral, said, "Thanks to the Friends' generous support, we have been able to restore Winchester Cathedral's clock for the first time in decades. The clock movement, the internal mechanics, was taken apart and fully overhauled, with decades of grit and grime being removed before being oiled and carefully put back together. Thanks to the abseilers, we were able to aesthetically refinish the clock dial and hands in brilliant blue and gold leaf. While so much of our work on the cathedral is delicate conservation, which can sometimes go unnoticed, the work to the clock dial has made a very notable visual impact. This has been a lovely project to be part of, and I'm delighted with the results." Deborah, please.
Future water supply plans. Southern Water has published a new long-term plan to secure water supplies for the future. The final draft Water Resources Management Plan, published on Friday, May the 30th, outlines how the company intends to deliver reliable services while protecting the environment, including Hampshire's chalk streams. It addresses the growing demand for water in the South East, driven by climate change, population growth, and planned reductions in abstraction. Ben Ring, Major Projects Director at Southern Water, said, "We have a current shortfall of around 166 million litres of water a day in Hampshire during a severe drought. This is as a result of limits on the amount of water that can be taken from the county's chalk stream rivers and the underground aquifers that feed them to protect those rare and sensitive habitats. The plan proposes a combination of improving water efficiency, reducing leakage, and new water sources. Part of the plan is the Hampshire Water Transfer and Water Recycling Project, which would purify treated wastewater for storage in the Havant Thicket Reservoir." Mr. Ring said, "We hope our plan gives our communities confidence in how we'll keep taps and rivers flowing for generations to come. Government approval of the plan is expected in autumn 2025.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Woman's punch threat. A woman who threatened to punch a paramedic when he tried to stop her taking her own life must pay £200. Maisie Swain, 22, appeared at Southampton Magistrates Court after admitting common assault, possession of a blade, and obstructing a railway. Sentencing District Judge Anthony Calloway told her the paramedic was there to help you. He was not there to be punched. Prosecuting, Anissa Alrube said how Swain disrupted Winchester Railway Station in January. Trains were stopped. Swain was given a 12-month community order with a 20 rehabilitation activity days and paid £200 compensation to the paramedic.
Thank you, Richard. Hillary, please.
And a new walking festival is set to hit the city. Hundreds of people are expected to join Winchester Ramblers this weekend for another of their popular walking festivals. 17 different walks will leave from the Ramblers tent outside the cathedral over the course of Friday, June the 20th, today, to Sunday, June the 22nd, all either led by a local walk leader or tourist guide. Varying in length from 3-mile strolls to 10-mile hikes, a selection of city, riverside and downland walks have been planned and all are completely free of charge. Chair of Winchester Ramblers, Richard Eve, said, "We have used our experience of walking this area over the past 58 years to plan some classic Winchester walks for the public to enjoy. These are going to feature some sections of iconic local routes, including the South Downs Way, Itchen Way and Pilgrim's Trail, and walks will pass through some beautiful local villages, viewpoints and landmarks such as St Catherine's Hill and Winnall Moors Nature Reserve, as well as parts of historic Winchester. We look forward to welcoming locals and visitors alike to showcase some of the beautiful walks around this area, as well as some of the amazing work our volunteers do as we celebrate this 90th year of Ramblers UK. The walking weekend will be launched at 10 a.m. on Friday, June the 20th by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sadaka Akwal, who will then join walkers on one of the Friday morning walks. Saturday's morning walks will be launched by Dr. Danny Chambers, MP, who is also looking forward to joining one of the Saturday walks. A full programme of walks can be found at winchesterwalkingweekend.org.uk.
Thank you, Hilary. Orchestra bid farewell to director. The Winchester Chamber Orchestra is saying farewell to its musical director. Craig Lawton is conducting his final concert with the orchestra on Saturday, June 28th at St Paul's Church in Fulflood. Mr Lawton has been with the orchestra for 16 years and during his time he has helped shape it into a vibrant and expressive ensemble. The concert will feature a personal selection of his favourite works, including Weber's Der Freischütz Overture, Spohr's Clarinet Concerto No. 2 and Beethoven's Symphony No. 7. Mr Lawton said, "It's been an absolute pleasure to be at the helm of the WCO for over a decade. In my time, we have rarely repeated a work, ensuring the orchestra experiences a lot of repertoire, a challenge they always rise to with hard work, determination, and a positive attitude. Alongside his role with the Winchester Chamber Orchestra, Mr. Lawton is the musical director of Andover Choral Society, Concord Singers, and the Charity Symphony Orchestra, and freelances as an organist, percussionist, and private piano teacher. Becky Lynch, chair of the Winchester Chamber Orchestra, said, "Craig has been the heart of the orchestra for more than a decade and a half. His commitment and musicality have shaped our sound and our spirit." Deborah, please.
Council loses £90,000 grant in homes scheme. Winchester civic chiefs are being urged to tighten grant giving after the loss of £90,000 to a charity for the homeless. The City Council grant in 2017 helped Keystone convert offices into four flats for the homeless. Keystone has been taken over by the Bournemouth Churches Housing Association, which has been selling off its Winchester properties. So four flats intended for the homeless are being sold on the open market at auction. It transpires that the council inserted no clawback clause to recover the money, as revealed by the Chronicle. The issue is back in the spotlight with the forthcoming sale of the St John's Road properties at the end of this month. Mr Tate, a former long-serving Conservative city councillor and property expert, spoke at a recent council scrutiny committee. "I wish to raise the issue of a grant of £90,000 paid to Winchester Housing Group, known as Keystone, back in 2017. The grant had been agreed on April the 20th, 2015, by way of a notice to assist Keystone to convert their offices in St John's Road into four self-contained units to be let to previously homeless who no longer required intensive support. In the notice, the reason for supporting the grant was stated as, the new accommodation will be let to previously homeless households who have low support needs via nominations from the Winchester Supported Housing Panel. It will provide modern, attractive accommodation that will be fit for purpose as a move-on accommodation, of which there is significant shortage in the district. Subsequently, BCHA decided to withdraw completely from Winchester and also Hampshire, and so have liquidated all the £2.5 million Keystone assets transferred to them when they took over the charity, other than the four flats in St John's Road. Mr Tate said, those flats are up for auction. Will the £90,000 be repaid to us in Winchester, or will the funds be lost and moved to Bournemouth? There ought to have been some clawback provisions should the flats be sold on the open market. Essentially, it seems to me that money raised from Winchester residents is being used to support people in Bournemouth, and the four one-bed flats will be lost from the affordable housing provision. If the council makes similar grants in future, I would like to ensure there are conditions or clawback."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
War vet of 100 to deliver online Burma lecture. A Second World War veteran will deliver an online lecture celebrating his 100th birthday. Lieutenant Colonel John Philip Cross, OBE, also known as JPX Saab, will speak about his experiences in the Burma campaign. The online event is organised by the Gurkha Museum Trust and will take place on Friday, June the 20th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, June the 21st at 2:15 p.m. The Trust described the lecture as an invitation to connect with history through the eyes of a Second World War Gurkha veteran. More than 40 years of Lieutenant Colonel Cross's life has been dedicated to the Gurkhas and Nepal. In the session, he will talk about the end of the Second World War and its lasting impact. The lecture is part of the Path to Victory series and promises to be a compelling journey into history. The Trust said Lieutenant Colonel Cross would deliver the lecture in his own unique, indomitable style. The event will be streamed online, but tickets must be pre-booked. More information, along with booking details, can be found on the Gurkhas Museum website under the title Online Lecture.
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
An article by Sebastian Hoare, NHS Trust Failures After Death of Woman. A Hampshire coroner is considering issue a formal warning to an NHS trust after what he described as its failure to provide its staff with sufficient training following the death of a beloved teaching assistant. Police found Samantha Young, aged 49, at her address on Draper Road, Wickham, on November the 11th in 2023. Over the course of the two-day inquest, Assistant Coroner Henry Charles scrutinised the mechanism of the various mental health teams, both state-funded and private, which had been helping Miss Young. After he'd heard all the evidence, Mr Charles blasted Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, now part of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust, for not providing its mental health staff with basic training. Speaking to Gemma Stubbington, now head of nursing at HIOWH, he said, "You're sending your staff out without the ability to risk assess people. I'm obviously under a duty to express my language judicially and not in tabloid terms. I'm astonished by this." During his conclusion, Mr. Charles added, "The fact that there was no formal training in risk assessment is a matter of very great concern to me. The system has to give people the best chance of getting to the best analysis of risk assessment available, and I say that not just for patients, but also for the staff." As a result of his findings, the coroner is considering issuing a Regulation 28 Prevention of Future Deaths report to prevent similar scenarios from happening again. Mr. Charles explained, "PFDs are saying, look, there is a problem here, and I'm concerned that there's a risk of future deaths." Beginning on Wednesday, June the 4th, the inquest heard how Miss Young struggled with anxiety and other mental health issues, which worsened dramatically after her divorce. She was in contact with several mental health professionals, including those from the Winchester Community Mental Health Team, based in Avalon House, run at the time by Southern Health in Chesil Street, and private clinic FREO Wellbeing, as well as her GP. In a eulogy read out at Miss Young's funeral, a family member praised her for her kindness, generosity and thoughtfulness. "We laughed, we cried and we put the world to rights," said the relative. "We'll hold you in our hearts and minds forever. Our hearts are broken and ache for our loss. Sammy, you'll always feel close to us in spite of going too soon." Mr. Charles added, "Can I express my sincere condolences to the family and friends of Sammy? It's very sad hearing what happened, but equally very uplifting to hear how she dealt with the challenges she faced." He ruled that Samantha Young took her own life.
Thank you, Hilary. Food waste recycling expansion proposals. Plans to expand food waste recycling are moving forward. Hampshire County Council is considering new proposals to support the introduction of household food waste collections, which would see waste processed at two specialist facilities for the first time. Councillor Kirsty North, Cabinet Member for Universal Services, will review the recommendations on June the 23rd. Councillor North said, "Residents across Hampshire tell me they are keen to recycle more, so it's vital we have the right infrastructure in place to support them. The planned expansion of household food waste collections by waste collection authorities across Hampshire is great news, with all areas due to have a scheme in place by April 2026. Having separate collections for this type of waste will require specialist processing, and I will carefully consider proposals to meet this additional need. Under the proposals, food waste will be processed using anaerobic digestion, which the government recommends as the preferred treatment method. The process breaks down organic material to produce renewable gas and organic fertilizer. It is estimated that between 30,000 and 50,000 tonnes of food waste will be collected annually from Hampshire households. The proposals are in line with the government's simpler recycling guidance, which requires all waste collection authorities to implement curbside food waste collections by April 2026. Deborah, please.
City Pizza Restaurant handed a one-star rating. A Winchester fast food takeaway has been slapped with a 1 out of 5 food hygiene rating. Pizza Pan on Andover Road was visited by a City Council inspector on April the 3rd, who awarded it the unenviable score on behalf of the Food Standards Agency. The official ruled that the major improvement was needed in the management of food safety at the restaurant. The FSA defines this as a system of checks in place to ensure that food sold or served is safe to eat. Evidence that staff know about food safety, and the food safety officer has confidence that standards will be maintained in future. The cleanliness and condition of the facilities and building, as well as the hygienic food handling, were both found to be generally satisfactory. The Chronicle approached Pizza Pan for comment, but received no reply.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Peace pole for Abbey Gardens. A peace pole could soon be erected in Abbey Gardens in Winchester. Winchester Rotary wants to erect the pole, which is part of a worldwide initiative. Richard Spalding, a member of Winchester Rotary, said it would hope to erect the pole, which is about 5 feet tall, in the Soroptimus section at the back of the Abbey House in Abbey Gardens. Captain Spalding, who served in the Royal Navy for more than 30 years, seeing service in the Falklands, the Gulf and Afghanistan, told the Winchester Town Forum that the first pole was erected in Japan in 1955, and they've spread around the world, but there are very few in the UK. The poles are marked with "May peace prevail on earth" in English, Japanese, Chinese, French, Spanish, German and Russian. Captain Spalding brought one into the meeting to show the City Council. Councillor Chris Westwood, chair of the Town Forum, said, "There's a lot of support in the message we're trying to push forward here. The next step is for the Rotary to come up with a firm proposal."
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
A stellar lineup as Organ Festival makes a comeback. Winchester Cathedral has announced the return of its Organ Festival, celebrating the world-renowned Father Willis organ. The festival, running from July the 6th to November the 16th, will feature a lineup of talented organists from across the UK, with recitals on selected Sundays ahead of choral evensong. The Father Willis organ, installed in 1854, is one of the cathedral's most treasured instruments, admired for its distinctive tone and historic significance. The Organ Festival offers audiences the chance to experience this remarkable instrument played by leading musicians in the cathedral's choir. To kick off the festival, internationally acclaimed organist James McVinney will perform a special evening concert on Saturday, June the 14th at 7:30 p.m. Known for his bold, genre-crossing approach to music, James will bring the Father Willis organ to life in an evening of thrilling music, including Liszt's Fantasia and Fugue on Ad Nos Ad Salutarum Undam. Tickets for this event are available at winchestercathedral.org.uk for £16.25 for adults and £11 for students.
Thank you, Hilary. Travellers move on. A large group of travellers has moved on from a Winchester park following numerous complaints and police involvement. Sunday, June the 15th, saw an influx of mobile homes and vehicles onto Oram's Arbour, Clifton Road. They left sometime overnight, Monday or Tuesday. Quantities of litter were left, which were collected and bagged by local residents. The bags were later removed by council contractors on Tuesday, June the 17th. The police and City Council has started taking action to move the group on. Deborah, please.
Community garden flowers, thanks to the volunteers. Volunteers have come together to build a new community garden in Wick. The garden is being built outside St Barnabas Church, Frohman Road, and is being constructed from pallets and other reclaimed materials. The idea for the scheme came from Stephanie Swan and is being supported by St Barnabas Church vicar Ed Dines, as well as residents and the community police. From Thursday, June the 12th until Saturday, June the 14th, volunteers came together to build the garden, with a grand opening to take place on Friday, June the 20th. Staff from the Chronicle also pitched in on June the 12th to help set up the outline of the garden. The opening will also coincide with the launch of the Winchester Garden Festival. As previously reported, the festival is running for 9 days, from June the 21st to the 29th, and will feature more than 60 events across 26 venues. The programme spans everything from art and music in garden settings to guided walks, talks and hands-on workshops. Events are set to take place at several locations, including garden centres, hotels, pubs and private gardens.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
City Serving Up Food Fest. More than 25 events that are celebrating Winchester's vibrant food and drink scene are in the pipeline as part of the two-week-long festival, A Taste of Winchester. The showcase returns to the city with events starting on June the 23rd and will run until July the 6th. This foodie fortnight will showcase a mix of venues, chefs and producers in our local food and drink scene, featuring great collaborations and creativity. This year's programme includes tasting menus and special one-off dishes to foraging walks, drinks masterclasses and hands-on cookery events. It's a festival designed to celebrate flavour in all its forms, from neighbourhood cafes to high-end kitchens, from locally grown produce to global culinary inspiration. Not going far for their ingredients is the St James Tavern, as licensee James Bennett explained. At the tavern we will be serving a five-course tasting menu and some daily specials that will introduce people to the many products we grow ourselves and source locally. We're excited to be a part of Taste of Winchester alongside many other great hospitality businesses. Another highlight of the programme is the community lunch hosted by Bar Lento, which brings together neighbouring independents Sushi 21 and Rust for a collaborative Sunday feast. Sarah Strangeway of Bar Lento said, "We're thrilled to be taking part. At Bar Lento, we're all about bringing people together over great food and conversation, so hosting a community lunch feels like a perfect fit. We're especially excited to be collaborating with our brilliant friends locally. It's such a joy to join forces with others who are just as passionate about food, community and Winchester as we are."
Thank you, Richard. Hilary?
Controversial building plans given green light. Controversial plans to build houses in Oliver's Battery have been permitted by civic chiefs. BJC Planning applied to build a pair of semi-detached houses, a four-bedroom house and a five-bedroom house in Mount View Road. The City Council Planning Committee voted to permit the application on Wednesday, June the 11th. Addressing the committee, Dr. Arnold Bull of Old Kennels Lane and Kenneth Lee of Mount View Road both objected to the plans. Addressing the committee, Dr. Bull said, "Our objection to this application has its origins in the unauthorised dumping of spoil on this land. This dates from 2016. Spoil was dumped without permission and it is still there." Mr. Lee also raised an objection due to the height of the properties. Rona Blundell from Oliver's Battery Parish Council also objected, raising concerns of overdevelopment and overlooking. Duncan McCarthy of Nord Home supported the application. He said, "The design of the dwellings has taken into account the neighbours' properties. The new accessway is already in use. There will be no overshadowing. There are two first floor bathroom windows which will be obscured. We feel it is a well thought out scheme and we hope that you will follow the officer's recommendation." Mr. McCarthy also took time to address Dr. Bull's concern, saying that the spoil would be removed.
Thank you, Hilary. Car is seized by police. Police arrested a suspected drug driver and seized a black Audi in a quiet Winchester street. The 36-year-old man has been released from custody after investigation after he was stopped in Parchment Street at around 10:50 a.m. on Wednesday, June the 11th. As well as being suspected of driving while on drugs, he has also been banned from the road and was uninsured. In addition, the car has been slapped with a PCN and is parked across the street from the former Winchester BID office. A police spokesman said, "At around 10:50 a.m. this morning, officers stopped a car in Parchment Street, Winchester. A 36-year-old man was subsequently arrested on suspicion of drug driving while disqualified and driving without insurance. He was released from custody but remains under investigation while inquiries continue. Deborah.
Pool issues. Winchester's main swimming pool has been partially closed after its roof was found to be faulty. A swimming meet was due to take place on Sunday at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park's 8-lane, 50-metre facility, but had to be cancelled at the last minute. Everyone active, which runs the site together with Winchester City Council, posted on Facebook, "Unfortunately, there may be some slight disruption to swimming lessons and public swimming over the next few days due to essential repair works being carried out on the roofing over a section of the main pool. We're pleased to say that the learner pool remains open. Some lessons may be relocated to alternative areas within the pool. Our team will be available on site to guide you to the correct location for your child's lesson."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
£1 million raised so far in campaign for Great Asset. A Winchester Amateur Theatre's campaign to raise more than £1 million has made a strong start. The Chesil Theatre launched a £2.1 million initiative to pay for a major expansion at its venue in Chesil Street. It would pay for a new entrance, studio theatre, better bar and disabled facilities on land next to the medieval church, which is the main performance space. Planning permission for the scheme, which would see the demolition of a Victorian house, was granted last November. Stephanie Danby, chairman of the theatre, updated city councillors at the Winchester Town Forum. More than £1 million has been raised and £200,000 towards the £1.1 million target has been reached in 3 months. Ms Danby said the theatre makes a profit every year and is very well managed. She said the theatre works for children and refugees and is bursting at the seams. It runs a national competition and a local one with Whittle and All Saints School in Highcliffe. Councillor Mark Reach, in whose ward the theatre is located, said, "It's a fantastic facility. We should try to support this if we can." Forum Chair Councillor Chris Westwood said, "The theatre is a great asset to the city."
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
A lane rental scheme plan. Proposals that could lead to the introduction of a new lane rental scheme are set to be considered by Hampshire County Council. It aims to incentivise contractors to limit the time roadworks impact motorists on major roads. On Monday, June the 23rd, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways and Passenger Transport, Councillor Lulu Bowerman, will review detailed proposals for the introduction of lane rental scheme, which would charge a daily fee for the duration of roadworks, including any delay, on more than 550 miles of road, or roughly 10% of Hampshire's roads. If approved by the Department for Transport, the scheme could be introduced in spring 2026. Councillor Kirsty North, the County Council's Cabinet Lead for Universal Services, said, "We're exploring new ways to limit the impact of roadworks and disruption for residents. As the Highway Authority, we have a duty to manage disruption across the road network and keep Hampshire moving, whilst also coordinating the essential work to maintain and upgrade our county's infrastructure. In recent years, we have seen a sharp rise in the number of permit requests to undertake work on Hampshire's roads. We know how frustrating this can be, especially on our busiest routes, and a lane rental scheme can act as a strong incentive for organisations to plan ahead, get the work done efficiently and reduce disruption. The County Council agreed in January to progress plans for a lane rental scheme, which would complement the existing road permitting scheme."
Thank you, Hilary. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers. Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Hilary.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.